of the other complementary therapies like yoga and mindfulness and meditation and many others. You know, typically in treatment centers and outpatient clinics and detox centers nowadays, you'll find a whole array of different alternative complementary therapies. And that's how the clients spend their day learning these techniques and experiencing the benefits, as opposed to just shake, rattle, and roll, which was the old way.
So how exactly did you integrate complementary and alternative therapies as an adjunct to the mainstream practice in the detox center?
Well, this actually became a bit of a problem based on after the legalization in 96. We were intent on integrating a variety of complementary therapies, and ultimately in 2001, the Vancouver Regional Health Board set up a task group to draft policy on complementary and alternative therapies, because what they were finding, there was a whole lot of them being used, but there wasn't any real regulation or anybody saying who could do it and how they could do it or any that kind of thing. So a task group was put together, and I happened to be on that task group, and after 6 months of working with this group, they came down with certain policies and procedures for the integration of CAM therapies. And that would be anything from Aboriginal spiritual healing, acupuncture, yoga, meditation, naturopathic consultation, healing touch, other things like even hypnotherapy was considered and seemed to be acceptable. So a wide variety of things were incorporated into the daily routine for the clients.
So were there any regulations surrounding your complementary practice of acupuncture? How do you overcome them?
Well, of course, the regulation, shortly after it was legalized, the College of Acupuncture, or College of Traditional Chinese Medicine Acupuncture Practitioners was established, and of course set the standards. And of course, anybody working for the government in that setting had to be a licensed or a registered practitioner with specific training in the field of addictions. I was early in my experience of becoming licensed. I became a NADA trainer, a National Acupuncture Detox Association trainer. And so I spent a number of years training many, many people in basically acupuncture for addiction treatment, teaching them about addictions as well as the protocols used for acupuncture.
You were one of the first practitioners of acupuncture in Vancouver. Can you tell me about how the government and local people viewed TCM and acupuncture before it was legalized?
Well, I have to say that it was akin to voodoo, because they didn't have a great deal of understanding about it, how it worked, and there was a lot of resistance, and it wasn't very welcome, put it that way. And it was only over a lot of time, a lot of consultation, looking at a lot of research. In fact, Dr. Louise Demarest and Nancy Poole were very instrumental in doing, under the authority of Dr. Wynot, who was a very influential doctor at the time in the downtown East Side, did some research and demonstrated the efficacy of acupuncture, and that was the basis for acceptance within the Coastal Health Authority. And once it was accepted in the Vancouver Coastal Health Authority, it was ultimately showing up on Vancouver Island and the detox centers there, and in the Fraser Health Authority, as well as different authorities throughout British Columbia and even Alberta and back east.
So when acupuncture first got legalized, it was first utilized primarily in the detox centers, not as private clinics?
Initially, it was the detox centers, and I think there was probably a couple outpatient clinics on the downtown east side so that people could just come off the streets, get a treatment, and then go back out. Yeah.
So who else was involved or a practitioner of acupuncture before legalization?
Well, I have to give a gentleman by the name of Grant Smith. He did jail time back in the 70s as a result of practicing acupuncture without a license, or, you know, not as being an unacceptable way to treat people. So he was one of the early pioneers, probably. I just happened to be in a good position in those years because I was working within the system, and I think that was probably a critical factor in as that I had access to the right people, the managers and directors and doctors and so on. And when I'm excited about something, I like to talk a lot about it. And so they got the earful and ultimately got curious enough to go down to Portland and other sites in the States. And just, you know, Seattle, for example, has a methadone program which incorporates acupuncture as well. So there was many, many people that headed down there to learn more about this really exciting approach to addiction treatment.
You helped to legalize acupuncture as a therapy in Vancouver. Can you talk about the process of legalization and the difficulties you encountered?
Well, there was initially quite a, you know, it was just ignoring some of the research. I had a stack of research probably a foot high, and nobody would even consider looking at it, which was really, I mean, this was valid and legitimate research, but they just didn't have the interest in the early years of examining it. They didn't believe it, actually. Even recently, I had an experience with I was doing a treatment on a client with tremors, essential tremors. This young, middle-aged man had a tremor all his life, and I used a little tongue-style acupuncture doing scalp technique, and his tremors stopped. And I saw him several days later, and they hadn't returned. This is one treatment. And I was pretty impressed, and I contacted a local doctor who was very much involved in Parkinson's and essential tremors, and I sent him a bit of correspondence, and he just refused to acknowledge. He said, "I just don't believe it." And with no interest in pursuing whether, you know, there was any results, or even, you know, I wanted to see a trial and just demonstrate what I could do with a, you know, I've since done it on a number of people and had similar results. And so for many physicians and others, they do have an attitude that the Western medical is probably the only way, but others are becoming more and more receptive. And ultimately what's happening is many of the current therapies like physiotherapy and chiropractors and physicians and others, they are taking some level of training and starting to utilize acupuncture in their practice. The only problem there is that their training is insufficient as far as, you know, our college is concerned.
And that was an interview with Dr. Les Moncrieff, a TCM practitioner and healthcare professional who has worked for 27 years with alternative therapies in the detox setting. In the interview, we talked about Les's experience using acupuncture and other complementary therapies in a detox clinic, his efforts to promote such practices, and some significant figures in the TCM community before acupuncture was legalized.
This station and the more than 250 across the country like it need your support. Day in and day out, they bring you the news that matters. They play the music you won't hear anywhere else, and they are a part of this community. You can make sure they get the funding they need to grow by visiting mycri.ca, where you can find all the details about the Community Radio Initiative. It takes less than 5 minutes and a few clicks to generate an email to the politicians who need to hear from you, mycri.ca.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Are you an artist, band, or record label? We want you to send us your music so we can put it on the radio. Not only this station, but stations across Canada. Check out earshot-distro.ca and share your music with more than 100 radio stations and programmers across the country. Earshot Distro is made by and for the campus community radio sector to help emerging musicians. Uploads cost $7 per song or $50 per album. Learn more at earshot-distro.ca.
Live from Durnaby.